It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello, and welcome back to Visiting Dugout, a Fans First Sports Network production. I'm Crystal O'Keefe, and today on the show, I have Jeff back from last season to chat about the Guardian. So welcome back.
Thanks for having me back. It had a lot of fun last time. I'm looking forward to having a fun chat.
Yeah, for sure. These two teams are kind of polar opposites right now. The Guardians are leading the division. The White Sox are down very, very bad in the division. But what is new in Cleveland this season?
Manager, and just the changes that go with that. Tito was, I don't know if I was surprised people outside of Cleveland. He was a little bit controversial towards the end of Cleveland. You know, no doubt a Hall of Famer. That you can't take anything away from him, but he was definitely kind of old school. And Tito was fantastic. I don't want this to be seen as bashing him, but like for many of us, vote has been like a breath of fresh air. Like he'll change that. Like last year, if the shortstop had a day off, whoever was playing for him hit in the spot that the shortstop hit in. Like that's the level of things we would see. Like, okay, Ahmed's not playing today, so Arias is hitting second. It's like, no, that guys can change in the lineup. It'll be okay. So we're seeing a lot more flexibility, a lot more of trying new things out. The team a year ago kind of learned the wrong lessons in 2022 and loaded up on contact hitters this past year. They went the other way and they took a lot of swings on guys with some power potential. Some have worked, some haven't. They're trying some things out. In many ways, it's a miracle this team is where they are. You know, everyone knows about Shane Bieber's injury. Tristan McKenzie has a slight tear still in his elbow from what reports are saying. He has not been the same guy. Gavin Williams is yet to pitch this year. Their number one pitching prospect in the upper minors, Joey Cantillo, got hurt at the end of camp, so he hasn't been an option. They've been really kind of scraping. I mean, Carlos Carrasco is 37, and he just started again today. And then Jose Ramirez has been a below league average hitter, which for a team that didn't have a lot of options, for them to survive all the pitching woes and survive Jose not being Jose has been kind of amazing. Definitely not what a lot of us expected. Like I thought they had a chance to compete because let's be honest, the Central is a train wreck. Yeah. I think everyone had some degree of coming into the year thinking, well, if everything breaks right, we have a chance. And then it's just a matter of those things breaking right. So they didn't add a lot of big name players. I mean, Ben Lively at the same time has looked like one of the best free agents anyone has added with his last three starts. But it's been a lot of just seeing what the younger players can do. And, you know, we'll have, I think tomorrow they're number, depending on your view, either the number one or number two prospect debuting in the Detroit series before coming to Chicago with Manzardo is on the way with Kwan hitting the DL.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. I forgot about Kwan. Yeah. I know losing Bieber was brutal just as a baseball fan in general. I felt for you guys because he is so talented and I was so curious to see what he's going to be able to do this year. And I forgot about Kwan, man. Yeah.
Sorry, now you see why the cat boy is there. Anyone who's watching the video, the cats like to take over the show sometimes. But yeah, they're rolling with the punches very well, and I give a lot of credit to the coaching staff and flexibility and figuring out how to make it work and rolling guys through. But yeah, we'll see how bad the hamstring is for Kwan. My favorite like random Cleveland sports fact is since Manny Ramirez, the number one outfielder in terms of WAR this team has produced, and Manny Ramirez was like the early '90s was Luke Scott. So that was, you know, number two is Ryan Church. And I think Kwan is third all time, like in the last 30 years. So they've just struggled with outfielders. So the loss of Kwan would be just in some ways harder to replace than Bieber.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So with that, how would you grade what they did in the offseason though?
They're in first. So you got to give them, right? Like, it seems weird to say, like, I kind of give them a C. In fairness, it's like, well, vote has worked out perfectly. Like that really buoys the grade. They have a lot of, you know, Ben Lively has been a fantastic addition. Floreal has been better than I expected. You know, they gave the young guys a chance, and some of them are really showing up and some of them are struggling a bit. Being willing to cut bait on Miles Straw, even though he's like your third highest paid player, is unusual. So, you know, that's a positive, but they didn't do a whole lot to add. They're really counting on those younger pieces. So it's hard to give them like a sterling grade because they didn't do anything monetarily. They didn't extend guys. Like, if you're not going to, and I understand free agency is fraught. If you want to sit out of free agency, I totally get that. So then try some extensions with some of these younger players. And they didn't even do that. So there is that degree of like, be nice to see them spend a little. I'm not saying they have to be the Yankees or anything, but it'd be nice to see them, you know, get up to league average. That's all.
Yeah. So with the Guardians leading the division, we know that this division can be almost anyone's to win, not the White Sox, but you know, the Royals aren't far behind. The Tigers aren't far behind. So how do the Guardians stay on top of this division, especially, you know, fielding through these injuries?
I think they have to hope that Manzardo is the rare prospect that hits. Like, we haven't had, you know, Kwan came up and he stayed up. Mm-hmm. But we've had a lot of guys like, you know, Freeman's currently the center fielder, but it took him a bit. Arias and Rocchio, we're still trying to figure out who's the shortstop. We need that prospect who just comes up and has no issues. And that could drastically change things just to add another, like, above average bat to the middle of this lineup. Bo Naylor was very slow out of the gate a year ago, and he's been glacially slow again this year. We're hoping he'll pick up, but one could argue he was the third most important bat on this team, and he's been not good, if I'm being kind. So we're, for this team, it's about some of those guys like Naylor. It all comes down to the youth. It's like, can Naylor kind of rebound? Can Bo? Josh has been fine. Can, you know, Manzardo step up? Can either Rocchio or Arias, you know, lockdown shortstop? Can one of these young players like Will Brennan, who's been incredibly inconsistent, lock up an outfield spot? When Cantillo gets healthy, can he prove that he's the next big arm in the system? Or can one of these guys who are coming up through the minors move quickly? It's all going to come back to young players, because now that Bieber's hurt, I mean, outside of Scott Barlow, that's your only free agent to be. And there is a world where even if they're contending, they flip him because of that, because they have so many young relievers in the system. But they are, it's all going to come down to believing in your young players and hoping that a chunk of them will find consistency as hitters. We're used to that with pitchers here in Cleveland. We just haven't had it with hitters.
Yeah. So if everything starts going right, you know, say these prospects are exactly what they need to be, do you feel confident going into this season and really just staying great, winning the division?
I do, because I think the bullpen can be really, really dynamic. They spent a second round pick a year ago on Andrew Walters, who they put him in Double A to start the year this year, and no one's been able to touch him. Like, he might be their second best relief arm, just full stop, majors or minors, behind Class A, and he'll debut at some point this year. And they've had a lot of really good relievers. I'll be curious to see him. I probably should double check. Maybe someone's claimed him. But, like, you know, Tyler Beattie was not good at the end there, but I feel like he'll still get claimed by someone. He showed enough that teams need pitching. So there's going to be ways to kind of work through it. But, you know, their starters just have to be good enough. It has to be kind of like getting them two times through the order. And, yeah, they'll wear down this pen. But I also feel like 85 games is going to win this Central. Mm-hmm. So I think they can at least continue with that if a few of the prospects hit right and they just, the bullpen doesn't have all of their arms fall off.
Yeah, for real. All right, well, we'll take a quick break and then come right back and start talking about what this series is going to look like. right. And we are back. So again, Jeff is here to talk about the White Sox Guardians series. So we, again, we're recording early. I think everyone knows that by now for at least these series. So we don't have a starting rotation listed quite yet, but with your starting rotation, can you just kind of talk about what that's going to look like or who you might even think might be up for this series?
If everything continues to track, since they don't have any off days, we can kind of, at least for Cleveland, it should be Lively, Carrasco, McKenzie, and Allen, which if you're a White Sox fan, is what you want to do because you're skipping Tanner Bibee, who has been their highest ceiling arm. He had a few bad pitches in the last start, but he did give up 5 to the Angels, which I think we know is not the best team. So he can be someone you get to. Carrasco was great against the Angels, but before that, absolutely obliterated by the Astros. So there is, you know, some inconsistency. McKenzie's last start was his best, and Logan Allen has been inconsistent. Honestly, right now, the guy pitching the best is Ben Lively, which is the weirdest statement I think I've made all year when it comes to pitching. It's the biggest debate when he signed in Cleveland was whether or not he had an option left so he could begin the year in AAA, and then it turned out he didn't, but he is... So he shut down Boston twice. He went through Atlanta without any problems. And then was it Houston? He just went 6. I don't know what's working well. It's a funny story because it's someone they drafted out of high school on day 3. Couldn't sign. He went to college. He's kind of bounced around. And for a team that their only free agent signings were Ben Lively and Austin Hedges, it's not exactly something that got the fan base excited. But, you know, he has been fantastic. So he's kind of a fun guy to watch. Carrasco rides the razor's edge every game. Sometimes it all goes poorly. Sometimes he gets through. But McKenzie is probably the other guy to note. And then Allen, we're just hoping for some consistency on their side. But the starting rotation has been their weakness so far. So again, not things we expect to say with Cleveland, but they're banged up.
Oh yeah, for sure. And I'm not quite sure where the White Sox are going to sit. Right now, we have 2 pitchers that are extraordinary. Garrett Crochet has been great. Eric Fetty has been great. The rest of them are really hit or miss. And unfortunately, by this series, we will probably have he who shall not be named back up from Charlotte. Because again, nobody wanted him. 2019 passed on him twice. But, you know, he's back, so you might see him in this series. But, yeah, our pitching has been abysmal. Our bullpen is really struggling, too, mostly because Pedro does not know how to manage a bullpen to save his life. And he still has a job because occasionally they win a game. So we're really just fully on the struggle bus in terms of pitching and – it is what it is. And again, we don't have all of our star players. You know, Moncada is still out. Luis Robert Jr. is still out. You guys have, I don't know, star hitter. Ew, I hate to say Gavin Sheets. He's like our best bet right now. So we do not have any real threats to the Guardians. But who might be the biggest threat for this White Sox team in this series?
I feel like the last time they faced, Benintendi was pretty good in that series. I don't know. You know, I could be wrong. That could be a bad memory. I keep always rooting for Andrew Vaughn to turn around or else that's going to be one of my worst draft blunders ever. I'll just be honest. I thought that was a fantastic pick. I liked everything about him leading up to that. So I keep thinking, hey, maybe that'll be a turnaround for them. Yeah, it's... You know, I look at that Chicago team and I feel everyone's frustration. Mm-hmm. And with some of the pitching stuff, like, you know, I kind of liked them adding Soroka because it's like, hey, if it works, great. You have a trade chip. If it doesn't, it's, you know, whatever. It didn't cost you anything. But adding the he who will not be named doesn't net you anything because no one's going to trade for him. Like, it's things like that that make me... Yeah. Go, what are you even bothering with? So, yeah, I feel like Robbie Grossman always hits him well. I don't know how he's doing so far this year, but I assume not great.
He's okay. He did have a great game recently, actually, just against the Cardinals, kind of his home where everyone loves him. So he had a decent game there. But again, he's one of those where some days his bat's going to be really hot, and some days you're like, why are you on this team?
Yeah, I wish I could say like, oh, you know, it's, I know there was such a small window where things were really worked out. And that's where I feel bad, I think, in general for White Sox fans, is like you had the division for like 2-3 years and it was supposed to be longer than that. Mm-hmm. And somehow it all got poorly punted and handled. And there isn't like, I mean, that's the one thing I'll say too. It's like, you know, I liked some of the gambles on interesting arms who were not good. I, you know, Jonathan Cannon is trying to be the rare guy from Georgia to actually perform well. That, I mean, the greatest player in Georgia history is Alex Wood. And number two, I think, is Mike Remlinger by WAR. It's not a great college for production. You know, adding a Schuster, at least he had a first round pick. Like, I liked some of the things they did, but as a Guardians fan, I definitely want them to get into that pen as quickly as possible. As much as they can, where it stands in this series from the outside looking in. And like, I understand to a degree, like, okay, so yeah, Tommy Pham can probably still hit and maybe you can get trade assets for him. But like, mm-hmm. I also feel like they're in the position where they should be finding that guy who's always hit at the minors, who maybe doesn't have great athletic tools, like trying to find the next, you know, Adam Duvall. Like, who, yeah. I don't think Adam Duvall was ever a top 100 prospect when the Reds got him from the Dodgers. If not, he was like back end of it. And it's like the guy performed well. But I remember very specifically, like, he's a first base, left field only. The guy's now played center field into his late 30s. Sometimes like scouting reports are really bad. So just like looking for that guy with high level production and just running those guys out. Like, I would like to see them kind of go all in on, if you're going to be bad, like, don't play Paul DeJong. You're not going to get anything for him. Don't do that. Like, just go play a bunch of young guys who, if you find something, then you've got 6 years of control. And if you don't, hey, it's easy to cut them.
Yeah. I'm just constantly flabbergasted with this team. Do you think getting into the bullpen earlier would also be a key for them to take this series? Because if you're able to come completely take over our pitching and hit off even our best ones, that's probably your best bet.
Yeah, I would think so. I don't, like I said, I could be wrong, and this could be my lack of knowledge of the White Sox. It's like, I don't feel like there's a whole lot in that pen that's super duper scary right now. Mm-hmm. In the past, there always felt like there was 2 to 3 guys in there that just dominated Cleveland. And there always seemed to have like guys like Bummer and Foster. And there was always like a new hard throwing young guy that was kind of scary in there. That they just always found way in it. You know, it's like going back to when I was younger, like Bobby Jenks, who was like, that guy couldn't hit the broadside of a barn. The White Sox used to have like pitching magic, like Cleveland did. Like, they used to turn a lot of guys around. And I don't see it as much. So I think just getting into that bullpen as quickly as possible, especially if they do match up against Fetty and Crochet, who are the two pitchers who are like kind of performing better. Especially if you can do it early in the series, if you can wear out or an already weak pen before game 3, then that's just going to set you up for success.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any actual fears heading into this series with this team?
I mean, is it bad to say it's not so much like the White Sox? It's like my own fears with Cleveland's starting pitching. Like,
no, that's valid.
It's like Carrasco. Can he, is he going to keep riding this razor? He had an ERA over 8 entering the game today. Like, how much longer can they, you know, like any given day, he can be bad enough to lose to any team. So yeah. Is that going to be a game where they just lose, not because of anything else than Carrasco has a bad day? It's Kid McKenzie put 2 good starts together. Can Logan Allen show consistency? It's kind of like, you're facing a team that, you know, isn't great. Like, mm-hmm. just, you know, putting it out there. Maybe people get mad at that, but I think we can all agree the White Sox are not in a good place. Mm-hmm. These are the teams, like when you are some struggling pitchers like Cleveland has, you need to get the W's, you need to beat them to help build some confidence, rebuild some momentum, kind of get in that groove. So I think for this team in particular, and then, like I said, Kyle Manzardo is going to debut on Monday. having him come out rolling. Like, it'd be nice to see him have some big hits in that series, you know, starting off with Detroit and into that, and just being on a projected path where whenever Kwan does get healthy or someone else gets healthy, that Manzardo is here to stay.
Yeah. So we can move away from the series because I feel like we know how this will play out. Although they have been surprising. They did win an entire series against the Rays, and they won the series against the Cardinals just very recently. But I feel like Cleveland has enough ammo. So even if this team got in hot streak, I don't see it going well for the White Sox even.
Was it? I feel like it was kind of close in the first one, wasn't it? Like, wasn't there a point where it could have gone either way in game three, or am I just completely wrong?
No, they were close games. I mean, they were both low scoring games, so it could have been either way. But at the same time, that was pretty early in the season. I feel like we at least still had maybe Luis Robert Jr. at the time. I don't remember.
I don't think he was there, because I think we were feeling like lucky to not face him.
Yeah, that could have been. It could have just been Moncada at that point, and then he went out almost immediately too. So we'll see. But moving away from this, we can chat about, you know, MLB at a whole for now. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts going into this season?
You know, it's been kind of a sad season. I feel like just because of the injuries, like that's where I kind of stand on. It's like all the arms blowing out. Yes, it's a story. It's an interesting story, but it's like at the corner, at the heart of it, it stinks. Like, we're losing really good players. We're not getting to see them pitch. Mike Trout's knee injury makes me sad. I know not everyone loves him, but it's like, he is the best. Him and Otani were the generational talents of the recent years. And I'd like to see like what that guy could do if he was healthy. I mean, it's bad enough that he rarely has any support in his lineup and is on bad teams, but that stunk. I am very curious to see just how crazy AJ Preller goes this year, with the knowledge that like this could be his last rodeo. That you know, the owner that supported him and the owner that was willing to spend all of that money unfortunately passed away. So it's like he has already been aggressive, and like how much more crazy aggressive is someone like Preller going to get? But yeah, it's going to be. You know, those are like a few things. I'm going to actively root against the Dodgers because I always root against super teams. And yeah, from there, it's just seeing what pops up, like who are the people who step forward. It's been saddening in the regard of the injuries, but like there's always some fun young player kind of ready to step in and make it, you know, fill those voids.
I agree with you on the Dodgers, and I know that they're doing great now. I was so concerned about them. Well, I don't even want to say because I don't want to see them continue to win, but I wondered how those really big personalities were going to really mingle, because I mean they have Freddie Freeman, they've got Otani, who is, you know, like baseball Jesus at this point. And I just wondered how that was actually going to check out. And I wonder how it's going to get, you know, later into the season too. But
I still find it funny how many people think like there'll be more two-way guys, instead of taking away the lesson that like Otani is just like, we've waited like 50, 60 years for him and that he is that incredibly special. Instead, the takeaway is like, other people can do this. It's like, okay, so who's the other guy yet? Who is the other guy who's shown that he can be, like there was a point in time I thought Will Brennan could be the guy for Cleveland as he was starting pitcher in college. I'm like, and he'll be the perfect two-way guy because he's a backup outfielder and a left-handed and a loogie. Like that's being on the fringes either way. I always think, I know people get, there's been some Otani fatigue, but it's like, sometimes I think we took the wrong lesson with Otani. It's like, that guy is just special.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I wish there were more. Like, baseball is really fun with Otanis, and I really wish there were just more. Like, I wish they could just kind of clone that prototype. But then I guess it would be almost just ridiculous because every team would be good. But, man, he's just good for baseball.
He is. And he opens them up globally. We used to joke on – over on the locked on side of things. Like, you put Ohtani in your show notes if you're facing the Angels, because you'll just see like a 100-point jump in your numbers. Like, he brings eyes, like baseball we know needs. Like, that's the whole reason for the pitch clock, is to like shorten the game and allow more people to watch. So it's like Ohtani is just, he's a marketing force that, you know, cause they're not good at marketing their brand. We right. know that baseball is kind of the worst at marketing their own brand.
Yeah. And I mean, they still are. We still have these, you know, constant blackout markets that we can't mm-hmm. watch. They really just kind of constantly shoot themselves in the foot. And for that to be finally like huge in other countries is really just so much fun. And I know we just went through, you know, the World Baseball Classic, which was a blast as well. And we got to see all of these players from all over the place. And like, I wish it could be globally. Like, I wish there could be more of that, because, you know, we see a lot of players come from all over the place. I mean, the White Sox, we always said we have like this direct Cuban pipeline, but now that Jose Abreu is gone, it's kind of shrinking, because he used to bring everybody in. But it was just so fun to see players from everywhere, and to see players that we know and love kind of go for their home team. And I wish that was more of a thing. I wish we could see more of that.
And like, I wish it was more of a like, you're allowed to celebrate. Like, it's okay to have emotions. It's okay to, like, you know, I remember a few years ago watching like the KBO championship, and like mm-hmm. their trophy was a giant sword. And like, I'm like, that's just fun. Like, why are so many of these unwritten rules not fun? And then the other thing I'm just the one thing I'll say I'm tired of when it comes to baseball is the umpire shows. I know people, the players push back on ABS, and I just wonder if that's like, I do wonder if that will make pitchers' lives even harder once there's a defined zone and hitters know exactly what it is. Mm-hmm. But the umpire shows just need to stop. Some of these like umpires showing like infamous Wyatt Langford at bat where he struck out with not one pitch in the zone is like, that can end. It's like, let, you know, market the game, make it fun. Let guys do bat flips. Let guys, yeah. you know, they're not disrespecting the game. They're just, they have emotions. Like, mm-hmm. emotions are good.
I will never forgive people for the Tim Anderson bat flipping discourse that happened back, you know, a few years ago, where it was just like, oh my gosh, I can't believe he did that. And I'm like, no, that's cool. And I want to see that all the time. I want to see a player that doesn't hit home runs very often just finally get one and, you know, do some cool pimp move with your bat.
Yeah, it's like Miles Straw, who hit one home run in like 2 years. It's like, that guy should do a backflips the whole way around.
That's, you know, I felt that Andrew Benintendi very recently had 2 home runs in a game, and he was the slowest start to the season. Like, it was to the point where I was like, why? He's still here for 3 more years. He's got the largest contract in White Sox history, and he is doing absolutely nothing. And then he finally kind of starts heating up. And I'm like, yes, see, this is what I want. I want to see cool things come from Andrew Benintendi, of all people. Yeah, and
I can't imagine being a Sox fan, because it's crazy to me where, like, it's Chicago. Mm-hmm. And, like, as much as people in Cleveland like to complain about ownership, and like, I understand our owner, he doesn't spend enough. And am I saying he's great? No. But like, when you have ownership where you're in Chicago and you're never given $100 million contract, you don't keep your own players, you get combative with the fans, you have talks about moving teams. Like, I feel bad for White Sox fans, and hopefully like, no one's going to get mad at me. Like, we don't want your pity, but it's like, no. It's crud. Like, that's a situation where I feel like you guys might have the worst owner in baseball. And I said that on our podcast, and there was one dude who decided to jump in our comments, and I assume it was Jerry Reinsdorf talking about all of the rings he has won, and that's how that's bad. You know, how can that be bad ownership when the Guardians haven't won anything? Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, Jerry, thank you. But
he is more Bulls centric if he wants to talk about rings.
Yes.
He only cares about one team at a time.
That's what made it so funny with this person jumping in our comments. I'm like, wow, I did not expect the pro Reinsdorf crew to find us. But it's like, it's just not fair. And it's even like when you guys were building things well to interfere and butt it and force management. And like, you know, as a kid growing up, it was I don't say it was fun. I was sad when Albert Bell left. He was my favorite player in Cleveland. But it's like, I mean, Frank Thomas, and it kind of goes back to the sport being cool, right? Like Frank Thomas and Ken Griffey Jr. in the when I was a kid in the 90s, I was born in 81, was like baseball was as cool as it got. Like baseball might have been the coolest sport. Like Griffey and Thomas made it the coolest sport in baseball. Like Frank, and that was part of it was just how cool the White Sox jerseys look. Like that is still in my mind, as well as like Griffey with the hat backwards and everything. It's like, that's what baseball needs. It needs kind of more things like that. It's that's when it was king, even when it was a slower game, even when there was, you know, less athletic players. But it's like, I still kind of look back as like the salad days, you know, of baseball. Issue, but I was just to finish that point, you know, it's a situation where I want the White Sox to perform well. There's much more annoying fan bases in the Central. So like, I think that's the one thing where a lot of White Sox and Guardians fans can come together and agree. It's like some base fan bases, I think, are more annoying to Sox fans as well. They're probably the same ones are more annoying to Cleveland fans. And it's like, I think a good White Sox are good for baseball. And I do hope that you guys get new ownership soon.
And it's better to have a competitive division too. Our division hasn't been competitive in I don't even know how long. I mean, it's been forever. What, the Guards went to this? Yeah, they went up against the Cubs in 16. Mm-hmm. So this division has just produced really nothing since then.
Cleveland had a really good season in 17 and 18.
Yeah.
1 year we ran into a cheating Astros team. I'll just say it, cheating Astros. And the other year, Carlos Carrasco was the second best pitcher in baseball. And for whatever reason, Tito Francota threw him once in the postseason to throw Trevor Bauer twice when Bauer wasn't good. Like he had one good year in Cleveland. The rest, he was a fifth starter.
Yeah.
I don't care what anyone says. Like, go look at the data. He had one excellent year in Cleveland. The rest, he was mid to back end. And that's the one that always drive me nuts. That was 2017. I remember that because it was my kiddo was born. So I'm sitting there listening to games after that happened. And like, why is Carrasco not playing? And it'd be nice if this division, because that also then would force someone like Cleveland's ownership to spend. Like, they don't have to spend because the division isn't good.
Yeah. And we've all know that Bauer has been mid at best. His Cy Young was a Mickey Mouse season on the Reds. Like that shouldn't even count.
And he like was more or less open about foreign substance use that year too, like cheating. So like that's that thing where people like to scroll over that. But like, no matter what your view is, without scouting all those or, you know, risking, it's like you can just look at the numbers. He was not good in Cleveland outside of 1 year. Mm-hmm. And to throw him over Carrasco was insane.
And he was an idiot in 16 and
yeah, with the drone.
Like, why do you want that on your team?
No, it was nuts.
But yeah, I like the point you made though with the White Sox and back when it was Ken Griffey Jr. and Frank Thomas and everything was cool. And that was kind of like peak hip hop where everyone was wearing the White Sox hats. You had like Eazy-E with the White Sox hat and you were like, oh, this team is cool. These rappers think they're cool. Like, this is a great time to be a baseball fan. And, you know, they kind of put this team really on the map, and it was just a blast. And I've talked about this too, you know, go fast forward just, you know, to the late 90s again. I will forever die on the hill that the steroids era was so much fun.
No, I agree, it was like no
was fun baseball would actually come back.
And they just find different ways to cheat, right? Like I said, foreign substances, all the other little things. There's always new ways to find, at least in the steroids era. You had a lot of home runs and it was interesting.
You could just sit and watch Mark McGwire just launch balls everywhere and it was a blast. And Barry Bonds didn't need it, but he did it anyway. But it was a good time. And I wish my children could have experienced 90s baseball.
Yeah, no. I can't imagine. Like my eldest is six and I can't imagine her like sitting through right now the style of baseball we watch. It's just there's not enough interesting things. I will go to like Northwoods League games where I live. And that's like a simple baseball because she can watch for a bit, then she can run and do something else and come back. But it's like I wasn't much older than her when I'd wake up and watch on like it was like Fox channel, whatever it was, had like Saturday afternoon baseball, and like that stuff just isn't there. And I was just happy to have any sporting event on TV.
Well, and we grew up in a time where like baseball and basketball were both really intense and really fun. And now basketball's fine, but it's not, again, not like it used to be, because all of these sports are like tamed. But minor league is fun. I will admit that. Like, we love going to minor league games. And my daughter does not want to sit still. So we can get super cheap lawn seats. She can run around and do what she needs to do. And my son can sit there and like be content and try to catch balls. But
no, that's why I love, like I said, I'm up in Wisconsin area, and it's like the Northwoods, it's college kids, like just going and seeing the college kids play, and then get to see them before some of them get drafted. And, you know, if she wants to go run on the playground they have set up in the corner, great, we'll go do that for an inning or two. It's a little bit more approachable. It's just baseball, I think, and that's what they have to work on, which I don't know if the people in charge are the right people to figure this out. It's like, how can we make this fun for kids? Like, I think it was genius when they did the Nickelodeon NFL games.
That was fun.
That was really smart. They need to find out a way to do that with baseball. Like, that needs to be done already. Like, let's make the, and I know there's some people out there who are like, oh, what do you, you know, no, you don't compromise the game. It's like, no, you can make things fun. The same way it's okay to show emotion. The same way it's like, if you love the game, then you love it and you get excited by the big moments. I, not to, you know, dig salt in a wound, but it's like one of our best episodes ever was me sitting here when, like, 3 years ago when Josh Naylor hit the grand slam against the White Sox.
Yeah.
And like, just people got so excited to see me show emotion and react to the moment. And it's like, you know, people like that. Why do we run away from it so much, or say it shouldn't be part of the game? It's like, no, emotion is fun. Like, no one wants a boring broadcast.
I haven't had that so much since some no-nos, because I sat and watched Lucas Giolito's during the pandemic. So like, nobody could be there. And I just remember pacing and pacing and pacing my living room, like laptop in hand, like, oh my gosh, is this going to happen? And then again, Carlos Rodon, who went from just so bad, constantly injured, not playing full seasons, to being probably the ace on the team that year and throwing a no-no, and me sitting here like taking puffs from my inhaler because I'm just like so just anxious and nervous and I can barely breathe. I'm like, oh my gosh, he deserves this more than anyone I can think of right now. Like, I miss those moments because we haven't had very many of those in the last few seasons.
I can imagine. I am jealous because I'll be 43 this year. Cleveland has not had a no hitter in my lifetime. The last one was thrown like May of 81, and I'm a summer birthday. Mm-hmm. In my lifetime, Cleveland's never had a no hitter. So I look forward to a chance to see one.
I feel like we've thrown two no-hitters against you guys.
Actually. Probably. There was the year where they had, I think it was 7 no-hitters were thrown against Cleveland.
White Sox were at least one of them.
It's like, it's been, you know, I can remember like Irvin Santana throwing one. Like, I had a friend who was at a game, like, you know, at one point, I think Jim Abbott with the Yankees. Like, that's the first one I watched. That's the one I remember. But it's just, that's something I haven't had a chance. I nearly got to see one in person when I went to a Brewers game with Max Scherzer, but then Carlos Gomez had to hit a flare and mess it all up. It's just, I don't know. And that's the thing, like the other part where I feel bad for a White Sox fan right now, it's like they haven't traded away pieces yet. They still have everything in place. They haven't, like, they didn't have enough to trade when the rebuild started. So it's like, you guys have kind of, There aren't a ton of young players to get excited by, and you're kind of in this weird in between. Well, I don't even say in between. It's like this terrible place of, I don't know if it's the worst record in baseball, but it's close. But you weirdly can't pick in the top 10 next year because you're a big market, even though you don't spend like it.
Yeah.
And your draft pick from a year ago hasn't worked out great. So much hope is going to depend on like picking 5 this year, and then if they decide to like fully embrace the rebuild and start making deals when guys get healthy, because I could be wrong, but it feels like the minors don't offer a ton of hope with the big league team. Like, the ways to find excitement with the team have to be limited.
Yeah, there's not a ton. I mean, Oscar Colas has been fun. He's kind of had flash in the pan moments where you're like, okay, he's gonna be fun, but then he doesn't stay up. Like there are guys that can be fun, but they just don't actually give them a chance to grow. And they just want to depend on all of these like veteran people. Like they continue to put Martin Maldonado as, you know, their daily catcher. And yeah, he had like one really great game recently, but it's so frustrating because you see him go up to bat and you're like, oh, he's gonna get out immediately. Like that's your first thought. If he's not going to do anything and he is a terrible framer, like he's lost his way of catching. That's for certain. And we see these guys that are young and great, and we want to watch them. We want them to grow with this team, but they're like, you know what? Nope. I think it's a great time for Robbie Grossman to lead off today. Like, but really, really? But I mean, we kind of saw it happening. I know last season when Rick Conn and Ken Williams were let go, we had this brief moment of, oh my gosh, it's going to turn around. But then we're like, actually, no, Jerry still owns this team. It's going to be Chris Getz. And he is somehow worse than Rick Conn.
You just have all of the Royals from a Royals team that spent the last decade being terrible.
Like, yeah.
That was very odd to me that they collected Royals from just bad Royals teams. I guess a lot of it just is, you know, hoping that some of these, you know, Montgomery can make it soon. And you know, I did like some of the, like, I did appreciate some of the trades this offseason where they added guys with down, like the Zach Deloaches and the Dominic Fletchers. It's like, those are the guys, those are what I was talking about. Like, those are the young guys that I'd rather see than like maybe a Tommy Pham. So I'm hoping they'll kind of embrace that more. You know, some of the young arms, see where they can go with that. But it does feel like as the outside observer, it's just a stinky situation, especially because, like I said, you're picking fifth this year, next year, 10th, potentially 11th. Like if Oakland, like, you know, depending on like who ends up being better or worse. And it's like, this is where those new rules stink, because it's punishing a fan base when their owner isn't acting like you're the market size you're in. So you guys have to pay a cost because you're a big market, even though your owner is operating like you're a big mid instead of Chicago.
He's trying to be the new Billy Bean, but he's never going to be that.
Yeah.
So that's where we're at. But well, do you have anything else before we wrap this up?
No, I just, again, thanks for having me on. You know, if people enjoyed any of this, I'll just say to go check out Locked On Guardians. It's my primary form of media anymore. Or you can check out my Twitter at JeffMLBDraft. I do a lot of draft stuff on there. So as I get close to the draft, do some things there. And I always do Locked Ons, draft night content. It's a fun year to be a draft person in the AL Central, I guess. Cleveland's never picked number one in the history of their franchise. So it's fun for us. Maybe not so fun, but I will say this. I think the tier one of this draft has five awesome talents. So the White Sox should have a opportunity to get one of those five at five. So while it might be frustrating to be, you know, fifth, that I would argue, like, to me, there's a clear top five right now. So I think Chicago's in a solid place still.
Yeah. It was way more fun watching the WNBA draft as a Fever and Sky fan than it will be.
I was gonna say, with them making the moves to go and get the two picks in the draft and like add some like real name players, I can see how that would be a much more interesting draft.
But who knows? We'll see. But yes, be sure to watch Jeff's coverage there, because the draft is a ton of fun. And you guys always put out great content anyway. So
just Major League Baseball doesn't do enough for it. I will say this, like, just as a funny side note, like, we did a live stream on the day of the lottery and people of all fan bases joined us because they're like, this doesn't exist anywhere. Like, Major League Baseball wasn't filling the need. We had Mets fans, we had White Sox fans, we had Oakland. We had our greatest numbers ever by a factor of almost 10, just because we filled a need that Major League Baseball wasn't filling, which goes to our earlier point. Like, they don't realize what they have. People want to have a place to watch and talk about it, and that they're making the lottery feel like a cast off when it could have been a prime moment. So hopefully they're getting better with the draft, and I'm hoping they'll continue to do that.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so very much. Best of luck in your series. Of course, I will always support other teams. I'm very much just a Players this year instead of full on White Sox. They crushed it me so much. But all right. Well, that'll do it for this one. Have a wonderful week.
Thanks. You too. Mm-hmm.